Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. Jeff, 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 Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff, Jeff, Jeff.
Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, your noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books. Make a fantastic Memorial Day gift. Also, you can find him over at TotallyIowa.com, the Iowa Business Report, a daily show he does down there in Iowa, along with the Iowa Politics Report from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
You know the sound, the only sound that's better than hearing that music is the sound of your voice behind the microphone. Oh, how are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. It's going to be a bit of a path here, but thank you. It's good to hear your voice as well today. We got to start with your thoughts on the Liz Cheney thing. I mean, I think the funniest damn thing I have heard in a long time was McCarthy this week saying, "We are a party of open ideas. We are the party of we are a party of different, you know, that of free thought." And yet we're going to get rid of Liz Cheney because she dares go against our great Uber Lord. And I think that is just insane.
They certainly have the right as a party to determine who their party leadership should be, period, right? So she can make the comments she wants. If she is making them as a representative of Wyoming, then those voters have the chance to decide if that works for them in 2022. So it's not inconsistent to say she should be able to speak her mind. It's also not inconsistent to say that the House GOP caucus should say, we don't want you representing the bulk of us. But here's the problem with it. The Republicans, to some degree, can't get out of their own way, and this was another example of it. Because look at the attention that Liz Cheney has gotten in the past week, 10 days, since this latest attempt to oust her came to the forefront. If they don't want to raise this issue and have it get publicity, then maybe you should not be creating such a stir. Because here's the thing that they wound up doing, the Republicans, by forcing her out. You now have the presidential press secretary talking about it. You have Nancy Pelosi talking about it. And what they're doing is pointing out that there's nothing to see here in 2020. The guy who lost is a spoil sport at best, if not borderline terrorist at worst. And so what the Republicans did was give the Democrats a club to beat them with. Now, if you know, what I have said to people who have concerns about the election, is it a Trump concern or an election concern? Because they're two very different things. There's not going to be a change in the White House. Donald Trump is not coming back unless he wins in 2024. So if you want to say you want to examine elections, that's one thing. But the Democrats, it serves their purpose to combine it into one issue in the narrative, and the Republicans are doing nothing but helping them do it, Matt.
Let's go back to Reagan. And towards the end of Reagan's term, he had Iran-Contra. There were plenty of Republicans that were upset with him because they saw exactly what was going on. And so there was some criticism, and people forget that when Reagan left office, I think his approval rating was like 32. That was a reclamation project by the Republican Party to turn him into the icon that he became. But he basically, because of Iran-Contra, he really damaged his reputation towards the end. And there was no bludgeoning of the Republicans who dared speak ill of great Ronnie at that point. It was just. You know, kind of, yeah, Iran-Contra, you should be able to criticize this. What happened to Liz Cheney is not a policy issue. She didn't vote against a tax bill, or she didn't, vote to keep abortion legal or anything. This was clearly a vote against her because she did not pledge loyalty to Donald Trump and criticized him justifiably for January 6th and the big lie, this idea that the election was stolen from him. And that is a very different path now. I was talking about this before you came on the air. The Republican Party is in a very far right, weird state right now where it seems like, you know, they're the bitter ex-boyfriend, whether you'll either like us one way or we're going to force you to like us. And it seems like that's kind of where they're at right now.
It's a tough place to be. They made their bed, if you will. But well, here's what a lot of it is. Look, the Bush-Cheney type of Republicans, that we used to call them country club Republicans, I think. The ironic part is that they lost their party at the hands of a guy who actually owns country clubs. I don't know. I found that. When I figured that out today, I found it interesting. But the point is, they're saying we want our party back. You lost your party because you weren't responsive to it. So it's not like if you get rid of Bad Orange Man, the party is going to welcome you back. And so now you got Bad Orange Man. He's not going away. I'm not entirely sure he's going to run in 2024.
Oh, he's not going to run. I don't think he wants anything to do with the White House again.
He wins this way, though, right? Because he can be the guy sitting out there, and he can have everybody pay attention to him. So it's sad. I agree with you. I'm not sure that he's going to run because of the fact that who needs the aggravation? He gets the adulation through a certain bunch of supporters on this side. So you just know it's a fight within the party, and those who are currently in the Congress, like the McCarthys and Scalises of the world, they think their best way to move forward and retake the House is to double down on the Trump voters. So nothing more complicated than that, but there are repercussions. If you then double down, what if he goes off and says something goofy again? What if voters rise up because they interpret something he says in a certain way? If this is not a winning strategy in 2022, all right, you just bet on the wrong horse. If it is a winning strategy in 2022, be careful what you wish for, because now you've emboldened this guy as you lead toward 2024, whether he runs or not. So it's a tough position for these Republicans who have aspirations, because they don't have a good choice other than the moral choice, and that may send them packing.
Here's where one thing I'll disagree with you on a little bit, or maybe just clarify. I look at where we're at with this party right now. Go back to the 2004 election. Bush had lost the blue collar workers. He was desperate to stay in office. Kerry was coming at him strong. And Rove and Cheney welcomed in people that were never allowed to be part of the Republican circle. The extremist far right Christians, the militias, the racists. Those people were welcomed in as foot soldiers. And yeah, it paid off. They won. But back then, they were saying, well, this is the end of the Republican Party. 4 years later, Sarah Palin out of nowhere becomes their nominee. And then it kind of gets worse from there. It was Cheney himself trying to preserve that second term for W that basically set the things in motion which have led us to this point right now.
Well, and I like that analysis. And what it proves is, in a very broad way, the arrangements, the deals, the handshakes that you make now to serve short term, you're going to have to live with them long term. I mean, truly, what do you have if you have, I'm going to say mainstream Republicans, for lack of a better phrase, you have mainstream Republicans who don't want anything to do with Trump, but they do want something to do with getting reelected. Do they say, look, the president had his time, we need to move on? Do they risk alienating that part of a very strong base? You know, it takes a pretty principled person to do that. Now, is Liz Cheney that person? Here's the problem I have with some of her statements. Again, you go back to, they've got kind of a little family blood feud thing going on here. And so she may not be the best messenger, because some of the motives may not be pure. But how many people did you see, Matt, in that caucus rally to her defense besides Adam Kinzinger? That's about it.
Joni Ernst. Joni Ernst, well, on the Senate side, but Joni Ernst did actually stand up for her yesterday.
She did, and did again today. And it's a lot easier. And again, Senator Ernst is on my program regularly. She's coming back next week.
Name drop.
Unless I say something now that could prevent that is where I was going. But yes. But here's the.
So she's a fraud, Hal, again? No, I'm sorry. sorry, Senator Ernst.
You're crying out loud.
I'm sorry. Jeff didn't say that. That was me. All right.
But the guys sound alike. You know, it's just guys talking. But here's the thing. It's easier as a member of the U.S. Senate to say the House shouldn't have done that, as opposed to being in the House to actually make that choice. I'm not saying she'd necessarily do anything any differently, but I will tell you that Senator Ernst was not exactly the strongest supporter of the president after the election. I remember having her on the program, and I said something about this was when, you know, there was still a lot of talk. I mean, this was before the Biden rally on a Saturday night where he claimed victory, saying, well, what do you think about this? Are a lot of people going to Georgia? Are there a lot of people going other places? And she said, well, we certainly wish the president well in this effort. I mean, that was as noncommittal as you could possibly get for a Republican senator who had just gotten reelected, in some part because of Trump voters. So she's not bought into the whole Trump thing from, in essence, from day one. But, yeah, I mean, how many people in the House really stood up? I mean, they did a voice vote, for crying out loud.
Yeah, there's the brave Republicans there. They did a voice vote. They did a voice vote in the first 16 minutes where barely some Republicans even got in the room at that point. And then they quickly got out of there. I mean, it was just a perfect display of cowardice, if you want to know the truth, because what it is, it's a great lie. They want to make sure, you know, the unwritten rule is that everyone has to be loyal to Trump. But they know that Trump, I mean, as Cheney brought up, the unpopulars that he has in a lot of places, which make winning with him on your side difficult. So they're trying to trying to embrace him while being able to say, oh, well, they didn't really embrace it. Now, Michelle Fischbach up here in 7, she basically said, oh, yeah, no, she did say that her voice vote went against Liz Cheney. But my guess is you're going to find a lot of Republicans right now who are going to be very hesitant to tell you, you know, how they voted. They're just going to say, oh, well, what's done is done. Let's move on. And they're not going to want to admit how they felt about Liz Cheney, because they know that that could eventually come back and bite them in the future.
All right. You thought that was a name drop a moment ago. Just, you know, buckle up. I was filling in on a program today where they had booked an Arizona congressman, Republican congressman.
Gosar?
And so I –
Was it Gosar?
No.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember who it was right now.
All right.
Give me a second. I'll try. It was Andy Biggs. Andy Biggs.
Oh, not the Biggs. That's a name drop.
I couldn't remember. Couldn't remember who it was. Okay. So anyway, we're doing the interview. And then I said, hey, you were in the room. You know, tell me about it. How'd it go? And, you know, basically, well, you know, we have somebody who represents us. And I finally, I said, if you don't mind me asking, how, you know, as a voice vote, where were you speaking? How was your voice? And he wouldn't definitely say. What he said was, well, I'm the one who engineered the original vote in February to have her ousted, so I think it's pretty clear where I stand. Okay, now I can figure it out.
Yeah.
But even somebody, Matt, who was very clear, and I'm not disrespecting the congressman. He was very clear early on. He wanted her removed from the leadership position and was public about it. So he's not cowering in a corner per se, but even somebody who's been public about it in the past would not say, well, yeah, I voted against her. Wouldn't say that. And that's the problem that they have right now, right? They don't want to say it, but, you know, I mean, I don't know if I voted against her and I was trying to double down with the Trump folks, I'd lead with that. I'd say, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me remove my mask because that's what we do these days. And, oh, by the way, I voted to fire her, Keister. You own it, right?
Yeah. Moderate Republicans. There's some Republicans are saying this is enough's enough, that this loyalty pledge to Trump is too much and that the party needs to move on if they're going to survive.
Okay, but to what?
In 1854, the Whigs, you know, broke apart and the Republican Party came out of them. The problem is back then, those Republicans would be Democrats today. That's the switch in the 1960s when the Civil Rights Movement. So, what you're asking is, would moderate Republicans today really cut the cord and go start their own party? The reality is frankly, and I'm going to be blunt, I think if they did, they'd take a large portion of the Republican voter with them. And I think it's the great lie that we're being told right now beyond the election is that this far right Trump worshiping is only a small percentage of even the Republican Party. And that if the Republican Party, if the moderate Republicans took their toys and went and started another party, that they would actually, my guess, if they got their deal going, if they got their candidates going and their party going, they could actually probably win quite a few seats in 2022.
You have to tear it down before you can build it back up. So to your point, are there enough who have the stomach for it and can say, look, this is what I believe and this is who I am? Now, if those happen to be principles that dovetail with Trump, then okay, but maybe they don't. This has been the issue with so many folks who they like a lot of the Trump policies. They don't like Trump. They don't like the demeanor, et cetera. And so that's led many on that side of the political aisle to say, okay, and they keep mentioning DeSantis. I'm not sure that's the best embodiment of it, but they say, should I have warned you to get your air sick bag before I, but true, right? I mean, they keep talking about it. But it comes down to a broader idea of, is there someone who can do the things policy wise and not have the personal baggage? Well, I don't think they found that person. If they did, then they might just gravitate toward that person as opposed to looking for the blessing from 45.
Well, you know, you had Liz Cheney trying to be that person, and she was, you know, summarily run out. I would say this.
She's not the person in the House caucus, but she might still be the person for moderate Republicans.
I will say this. You talked about you have to tear it down before you begin again, unless you do like the Whigs and you just leave and you just go start your own party and say so long, good luck in the future, because it didn't work out too well for the Whigs after that. Let's take a break. Come on back. There had been some testimony about the 1-6 insurrection on Capitol Hill, namely Christopher Miller, the former defense secretary. We'll talk about that when we come on back. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Jeff Stein joining us. Jeff, Julie actually brings up the point. She thinks Liz is betting Trump will get indicted, which, by the way, is sounding more and more likely here every day. And then his followers will fold, and basically that would open the door for her to run 2024. You know, if that's the case, I mean, if he ends up getting into big legal trouble, especially in New York, yeah, that, you know, that might end up basically, you know, and he walks away, because that's the real trick here. Unless Trump anoints someone like DeSantis to be the guy that carries his mantle, then the reality is if he just fades away, then there's that vacuum, and Liz Cheney might be looking at that.
I certainly don't think she is. Well, how do I phrase this? This is not to criticize Wyoming. That's their home, wonderful state. But I think she has aspirations that are broader than simply being the congresswoman from the state of Wyoming.
Yeah.
Now, does that running for president in 2024 or 2028, you know, who knows? But she has certainly taken a principled stand. And even those who wanted her out of leadership in the House have been very clear to say she has the right to say whatever she wants to say. She has the right to do it on behalf of Wyoming. Let Wyoming take care of that. But she doesn't have the right to say it in my voice if I'm a member of the House caucus. That's how their theory goes on this. The fact that we're talking now in, what, May of 2021, we're barely past the 100th day of this administration, and we're trying to handicap 2024. Well, holy cow, you want to talk about a lot that can happen between now and then. So from her perspective, she's consistent in terms of her viewpoints. She hasn't done something that she's going to have to answer to. Like, for example, some of these folks, they're going to have to answer for supporting Trump in various ways. She is talking about votes that she took. She's talking about very publicly not liking certain things. Well, there's a level of consistency there. Now, does it help her in Wyoming? Does it help her in 4 years? Does it help her in 6 years? I don't know. But again, I doubt that this is her last stop, in her view.
Her big challenge is going to be winning in 2022 in Wyoming. We'll see if that happens. The hearings on the Capitol insurrection, going on, Christopher Miller, the former defense secretary, was in there. The one major bombshell that he's revealed today, outside of he himself admitted that Trump, you know, was somewhat responsible for the crowd, but he did say Trump had talked to him about the National Guard, and his request was that the National Guard, if it was dispersed, and this was on the 3rd of January, so talking about in advance of this, that he wanted the National Guard there to protect the demonstrators, not any of the buildings. And that is a, okay, you mean the people that were, you know, breaking in the building. That was what he was talking about. And, of course, we should remind everyone, his first video statement after the insurrection was, I love you to the insurrectionists. So it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it just, he was clearly trying to set this up to where they could do whatever they wanted to do and even have National Guard protection while they did it.
I really miss your Trump impression because it's just fabulous. But the smarmy, smoothie little Trump voice thing, that's great. Well, it's one thing to say let's protect human beings, okay? I mean, nobody would argue with that in a vacuum. But when you put it in the context of everything else, it's hard to avoid the conclusion you just drew, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It was a matter of, now you make sure that none of my people – right? Mm-hmm. He may have said, a demonstrator, my people get hurt. That whole thing that day, if we actually looked at all of the ways that the system failed, there's a lot to go around. And that's what concerns me more than simply locking up these people. They should have justice administered, certainly. But I think it exposed some systemic things that if we simply say, oh, it was the Trump thing and now Trump's gone, everything's fine. I don't think everything is fine. I think we need to look a little deeper at it and take Trump out of the conversation because it blurs too many things that could be serious later on.
Trump was not an excuse for their behavior that day, period. Period. I mean, he incited them. He incited them. But, you know, they're beating on cops. They need to pay for that. They shouldn't be able to say, well, I was doing what they did. I'm not buying the Nazi Germany thing. I agree with that.
No. And all I'm saying is that if we simply say it was Trump engineering this and orchestrating it and getting rid of Trump, you won't have a problem again. There are some problems in terms of either chain of command or protection for people in the Capitol, et cetera. We cannot just dismiss those by saying, it was all Trump. And that's all I'm saying is that we need to not just fool ourselves into thinking, bad orange man out of the room, everything's fine. Because I don't think it is fine. We need to look at some of these systemic things.
Jeff Stein, once again, find his books, Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. We'll spotlight this. Jeff, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you soon. See you, Matt.
Take care. We'll break hour two when we come on back.